Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the continuously updated huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. Huntrealestate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate, even out to Phoenix, Arizona, and now in Boston, Massachusetts. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Call them today, 633-3700, and ask one of our very skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your particular home financing needs and wants. And that is our guarantee. And also ask about our many exclusive programs, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash. And every day I hear more stories from our people about how competitive it is for every new listing that comes on the market. And the winner, generally speaking, is the one that can convince the seller not only of the price, but of the terms of their offer. The best term, of course, is cash and a quick closing. So we can provide that for you through our pre-purchase commitment at no cost or risk. And that's at 633-3700. The people on Hunt Mortgage will take care of you and provide you with personalized, customized, what we like to call knock your socks off service. Check out that low rate guarantee. Don't forget about the first ever 24/7, 365 real estate hotline, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property listed for sale in Buffalo, Niagara, Rochester, Syracuse, Albany, Utica, Watertown, even out to Phoenix, Arizona, and Boston, Massachusetts through our local numbers. The local number here is 716-631-4800. Enter the street number of the house you want to know about. That's all you have to do, no matter whose listing it is. And the hotline will prompt you with a choice of street name. Select the one you want. You'll hear a brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that property, all automatically, just that fast, faster than going to your phone in any market we serve, or I should say going to the web on any market we serve, any listing, whether it's ours or any other brokers. We have a very active market for you right now here in Western New York, and it's a great time to enter the market. Finally, we are able to show houses again, which is an interesting change and a very beneficial change to both the customers and the people in the industry. So we hope you'll take advantage of that. Call 633-9400 if you have any questions about real estate more generally. That's the Hunt Customer Service Center, the only one of its kind in North America. And don't forget about this guarantee. We will sell your home, or ERA will buy it. That's a seller security plan. There's no stronger guarantee in the real estate world today. Hunt is the official real estate and relocation provider. Our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, and the Rochester Americans, and we're looking forward to seeing them all in the field and actually being able to see them by going to the games, which will be exciting, hopefully beginning this fall. We are broadcast live here in WBEN 930 AM. If you'd like to participate in today's show, call us here in the studio at 803-0930. That's also the text number now. 803-0930, or your long distance number is 1-800-616-9236 or *930. Those are all free calls. You can also listen live on the web at WBN.com, so tell your friends out of town about this. And we have a very special show for you today. First time ever, my guest live remote is the chairman and CEO of M&T Bank, Renee Jones. Good morning, Renee.
Morning, Peter.
Great.
Having me on the show.
It's great to have you with us. It's an honor. Renee, you are in a position in our community which is really unique, and you have taken that position as a result of your own hard work, obviously, but also, and your skill, but also because of the passing of Bob Wilmers, and I think most of our listeners would know that name. But since you've been there at the bank, you've had you've taken a whole bunch of challenges, but let's go back in time a little bit. Let's go back in time and help us understand a little bit about Renee Jones. I did my homework on you, and there's a lot written, but I'm not sure all our listeners will know a lot about how you got to town and how you, became the chairman and CEO of the bank.
Mm-hmm. Well, I grew up in Ayer, Massachusetts, which is a very small town outside of Boston, and most notably close to Fort Devens, which is where my father, who was a career military man, was last stationed. Ned's African American. He joined the Army in 1941 and met my mother, during a campaign as they were working their way to the Ardennes. So my brothers and sisters, which there are six of us in total, were born in different places, born in Belgium, born in Germany, and then various places in the United States. And so we grew up in this little small town. I didn't know too many business people. I always tell the story, I didn't really know I didn't know any doctors. Because we were in the military, so we would go to the barracks, and of course the guys serving us were a major and was a doctor, but they were all in uniform, and so I didn't realize that you could actually be a doctor until I went to Boston College, where I studied business and accounting, and learned a lot about what opportunities were out there. Eventually, I was in public accounting. I was a CPA. I went to graduate school, and I got a letter from someone at M&T, and showed up in the summer of 1992. So I was really fortunate. What I didn't realize was that it was a recession, and a really simple idea that any company that's hiring people during a recession is probably a really good, healthy company.
That's the truth.
I'll tell you a story. I 10 years after I started, maybe about 9 years after I started, was in the management committee meeting, which was Bob Wilmer's meeting every Tuesday. And it was probably after 9/11, and the economy was down. And so we went around the room. We said, "Well, what could we do?" And someone said, "Well, why don't we slow down the hiring of MBAs and undergrad?" So they went around the room, and each person said, "Yes, that's a good idea." All the way around, 14, 15 people said yes. And it came back around the table to Bob. And he said, "Okay, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to double the hiring." And someone said, "Well, what are you thinking about? Times are tough." And he said, "Look, this is the only time we can get really talented people to move to Buffalo is when there's a recession. So we're going to double the hiring." And it was at that moment that I realized what had happened to me.
Well, that's interesting. Bob Wilmer was actually told that story to some of us as well, and I remember him telling that story, and it was interesting because he was telling it in the context of what the M&T had done in terms of its overall hiring relative to the total new employment in Western New York. And he gave a very interesting statistic that the number of people that had been hired by M&T Bank roughly equaled, the number of total net new jobs that were created in Western New York over some period of time. I can't remember exactly what Bob was saying, which is a real testimony to what you're saying in terms of Bob Wilmer's commitment. That is it's an interesting, I guess, extension of a story really about how the bank transitioned under Bob's leadership. Take us back in time a little bit, Renee, in the history of the bank itself and how it got to the size of some 17,000 employees that it has today.
Yeah, well, I think it is a really great story. I think, I learned more and more over time. Recently, in the past year or so, I saw a letter, I think it was from maybe 1982, it was from Brent Baird to Bob Wilmers saying, "I've looked at your 13D filing." Bob apparently had bought shares in M&T. And he said, maybe we should chat. And so right from the beginning, it was sort of, deep Buffalo roots that actually invited Bob to think about and introduce him to Buffalo and the bank. And, he and George Pereira came in. And the story that sort of strikes me that I've heard back then was when our vice chair and lead independent director today, Bob Brady, tells the story of the doubt of whether this individual was going to come into Buffalo and you know, be here for a few days, a few years, and sell the bank or something else. And he describes Bob Brady describes the fact that when he first came up, there was that bowl of M&Ms on the 19th floor of M&T, and he thought to himself, "Well, that won't be here very long." And he's telling me this story some, I don't know, 25 years later, and he says, "That damn bowl of M&Ms is still here." And Bob really had a really deep, deep sense of what a bank was supposed to be and what its role was. I don't think he ever thought about the bank getting bigger. I think he thought that opportunity came his way because things were healthy. So in 1987, after Black Monday, we bought East New York Savings Bank in New York City, which was an opportunity because in Buffalo there was a lot of deposits and a lot of depositors, but not as many opportunities to lend. And then in the early 90s, we participated in the Resolution Trust for Gold Dome and Empire, and that's significant because that's the point where Warren Buffett, a call was made to Warren Buffett. As you know, Bob was introduced to Warren through Stan Lipsey, and that began this long relationship, which still exists today. And essentially, over time, by sticking to our knitting, focusing on communities, trying to do the right thing, we remained healthy and had the opportunity to sort of, usually in times of crisis, to sort of add other institutions to our family. So we started from the fourth largest bank in Buffalo in 1983 to 16th or 17th largest company in the largest bank in the country. So we do business from Buffalo to Richmond, Virginia, in terms of branches. We own Wilmington Trust, which has offices in Florida and L.A. and Minneapolis, and a couple of offices in Europe. It's been a really crazy ride just from sort of sticking to our knitting.
You use the term a bank is supposed to be, but you kind of left us hanging. What is a bank supposed to be, Renee?
You know, we're a financial intermediary, is the technical term. But what it basically means is that our job is to sort of bind the community together, to focus on understanding what's going on in a community, understand the constituents, and to be able to take money that's been deposited and given to us in safekeeping, and to sort of know enough to know where to invest that money in a way that improves the health of that community. You know, I've never met anybody else in the banking industry that has such a deep sense of and deep understanding of that purpose. And, you know, various times throughout history, the great financial crisis being a very, you know, a clear one, a lot of the banking industry just loses its way. And what I mean by loses its way, it forgets that that's what its purpose is. Part of our history has been that Bob ingrained that theory, that the idea that we could be a part of the community, which included churches and not-for-profits and cultural institutions, and all of those things, when you knit them together, improve the quality of life for the individuals that live in that community. And if we can play one small part in helping that happen, in maintaining those connections, then in relation to that, we'll likely be a more healthy financial institution.
You know, it's interesting. One of the things that kind of circulated among some of the people in the community, Renee, when Bob passed away, was that some people were concerned about M&T's longer-term commitment following Bob's passing. And because prior to that, obviously, as you know only too well, the footprint of M&T Bank was well beyond its own real estate. It was into almost every aspect of our community life here in Western New York. So how have you taken that kind of history that was created under Bob Ulmer's leadership. How have you taken that and continued that and up to today?
Well, you know, the thing about culture is that, and particularly culture over long periods of time, you sort of build your environment, and in this case, Bob built his environment. He built his values and beliefs. And then what happens over time is people who are attracted to that philosophy tend to come, and people who are not attracted to that tend to leave. And so Bob sat in his position for 35 years. And so what he left behind was just this network of, you know, almost 18,000 people who come to the bank really simply because they believe in that way of thinking. And so I inherited that, and I think my first job was to make sure that people felt comfortable that that was still a huge part of our value system. I think what we've done, though, is we've in part by focusing on a sort of renewal around the focus on talent and the importance of talent in the organization, bringing other people into our community from outside of our community. Really what has happened is we've tried to expand our definition of what community is. We're finding that there are communities within our community that are overlooked, and we're finding that there are communities that transcend geography, that we can apply in our approach, and where our approach is welcome. So, you know, a great example is on the east side of Buffalo. We've been here for a long time. We decided to run a survey. We asked the folks on the east side, you know, what do you think about M&T? And they said, well, M&T is wonderful. They do great things for the community. We really love having M&T. They're just a great corporate citizen. They said, well, how come you don't use that? What do we do for you in terms of our banking products? And they said, oh, well, unquestionably, you know, you don't do anything for us for banking products because you're not offering the products we need. So it's just a stark reality, right, that we had to really go out and invest in understanding each of, you know, that community within our community in a way that really deeply understood their needs so that we could begin to change and begin to provide our approach, you know, more fully.
Can you give an example of some of the products that those individuals that responded to your survey spoke of and how you met that need?
Yeah, I mean, you know, so when we started talking to consumers and understanding what their challenges were, you know, a couple of things came out. A secured credit card was something that was really necessary because without access to a secured credit card, people were being forced to go to non-bank institutions and getting charged rates as high as 20-25%. We did various checking accounts with features that fit the needs, partially with low fees and so forth. Peter, what was really crazy was we launched those products and they were successful, but then it changed our thinking. And as it turned out, across our footprint, the products and services that were needed by the community on the east side actually were really attractive to millennials across our entire footprint, all the way down in Baltimore. So by listening a little deeper, we learned a lot about how we could be a better bank.
You know, that's pretty fascinating because it's sometimes by listening to, as you point out, the various parts of the community that may be overlooked, we learn things about the parts of the community that aren't overlooked necessarily. And I think that's something that's going on today, don't you, in terms of what's going on around us, which is really unprecedented? And I have to ask you what your feelings are about the bank's reaction or actions that will follow as a result of this.
Well, a couple things. You know, I'll have to start by saying I couldn't be more proud of our company, our employee base, and the work and preparation that they've done leading up to the recent events. with George Floyd and some in our own town. We have developed in the bank a diversity, inclusion, and belonging strategy. The belonging part's really important to make people feel welcome, like they're a part of the family and they can make decisions that are in the best interest of our community, empowering people to do so. That strategy is approved by the board. So there are a host of things that we've actually been doing recently. One of the things that you find as an example, I'll give you one example. We've been bringing in new capabilities. And the way I tend to think about those new capabilities is we've shifted from an inside-out view of things, meaning the bank needs something, and so we build a product and we offer it to customers. And we flip from an outside-in strategy. So, as I said, we talk to customers and find out what they need and bring that in. And that includes then looking at your capabilities and are you looking at the journey that your customer is following. So, for example, in the bank and just in the work that we do, we've been exploring the journey that a customer goes through when they purchase their first house. And as it turns out, the purchase of your first house is one of the most stressful events that will go on in your lifetime. And it's for various reasons. And so we used our talent to be able to walk through that journey and map that journey to begin to find the pain points for, new customers and through that process to try to alleviate them. And as a result, it results in a whole different change to our experience that we're putting customers through. Well, one of the things we decided to do was, why don't we journey map the career of women? So if there's a glass ceiling and we find that we start out with our population has over 50% of our employee base is women, but there are less women as you rise to senior ranks, well, why would that be? And so let's go take a look. When these events started, we were able to take that same approach and we said, well, why haven't we done that for African Americans? And so that's not an idea that I came up with. Because we've created a system underneath our chief diversity officer, some of the employees came up with this idea and said, okay, they know that we can do these things to actually improve the quality of life of African Americans in our community.
Renee, that's a great thought. I'm going to ask you to hold it right now. We have to go to break. We'll be right back with more with Renee Jones from Our House Tears after these important messages.
Hunt has been serving your real estate services needs since 1911. In all that time, Hunt has never lost their commitment to this community, and nothing, including our current challenges, will change that commitment. Hunt will face the challenges as they always have with you, together. Through the power of state-of-the-art technology, they're able to remain open for business at Hunt Mortgage. Call 633-3700 and any of Hunt's mortgage professionals can assist you. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the continuously improving huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. Huntrealestate.com is the only place on the web where you can find a complete inventory of homes available not just here in Buffalo, Niagara, but all across upstate and through our links to Phoenix, Arizona, and also Boston, Massachusetts. You'll also find access to a complete set of home ownership services at huntrealestate.com, which is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, and for more information about our many exclusive programs, including the one that allows you to roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage, effectively allowing you to buy the before but live the after, call 633-3700 and ask for details. Also ask about our pre-purchase commitment, our warm home loan, and even our second look program, which allows you to know that whatever you receive from any lending institution is the very best deal you're going to get. We'll take a look at it. We'll make sure it's the lowest rate and closing costs you can find, and that's our guarantee to you. No cost or risk, 633-3700. And if you have a general question about anything relative to real estate, call the only customer service center for real estate alone in North America, the Hunt Customer Service Center, 633-9400. Our customer service reps will either answer your question right on the phone or they'll direct you to the appropriate professional for whatever it is you may need, whether you're considering buying or selling a home, financing a home, insuring a home, or even fixing up the one you have. And remember, our guarantee stands. We will sell your home or ERA will buy it. That's a seller security plan available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA sales professional. I'm in the studio today, live remote, with Renee Jones, the chairman and CEO of M&T Bank, as most of you know. And we've been having a kind of a wide-ranging conversation that's coming, I guess, round to the topic, one of the two topics of the day here in our lives, all through the world today. And that is the topic of the push for social justice, and I'm not sure how else to describe it. But Renee, you were talking about the customer journey and how you inside the bank are looking at the whole picture of that experience, that journey, instead of from the inside out by creating products, which most companies do, and by turning that to an outside in look. And you started with the discussion of the purchase of a first home, and I want to come back to that. But then you talked about the career of women, and just before the break, you mentioned the customer journey of African Americans. Is that how you're putting it, Renee, or is it more general than that?
Well, I think what we continue to learn is that to be a strong financial institution, that you've got to have a fair amount of empathy and compassion and interest and curiosity in solving problems for people. And we tend to believe that there is a social contract that exists within the communities. We've talked about some of them, which you're involved in, where we all work together to make it a better place. And when you see challenges and issues, I mentioned women, I mentioned obviously African Americans and their lack of inclusion in our society, that we think these are the tools that begin that conversation to explore and learn so that we can, begin to put in place things that sort of break the pattern that we've been experiencing and let people be more included. So it applies to lots of problems. The approach applies to lots of problems.
I don't know if you watch Squawk Box, but yesterday morning, Sandy Weill was on, the former chairman and CEO of Citicorp, and he was talking about what the job of the CEO is. And one of the things he mentioned was the responsibility to shareholders. And he stopped at the word shareholder. In the many things I've read about you, Renee, you've taken that farther into the. Use the word stakeholder. How do you define stakeholders in a bank?
Well, for us, everybody we touch. It's our customers. It's our fellow citizens. It's clearly the shareholders. But you can't do much for your shareholders without actually having a strong commitment to your employee base. Delivers all of the services and creates all the value. It's been surprising to me that it's taken so long, and there's been such a debate about the idea that if you're attentive to all of your constituents, that you might actually have more financial success. And the way I think about it is that. People are always talking about how do you create shareholder value. Well, for us, it's sort of like, well, how do you create value if you're not talking about, if you don't really appreciate values, right? And I'm not saying that we were super enlightened in the early days. Maybe Bob was. But we've just sort of found that our approach of looking at the community as a whole is one that has where the benefits have inured to our shareholders. So maybe it's a test and learn. It's just sort of the space that we've fallen into.
Bob Wilmers started a project, as you know, off of Bailey Avenue, having to do with the Westminster School way back when, and that's broadened out into the Promise Community, Promise Neighborhood concept. If you study this, which I'm sure you have, the whole, not just what M&T Bank did and others many others in our community have worked on. There's really a couple things that lead to better results for individuals and families. One is education, and I think the M&T's commitment to education is probably second to none in our community. But the other piece of that is family. You are a living example of that, Renee, in terms of what education and a strong family can do to change the lives of the next generation. And I think it's safe to say that most people, if they are pursuing the American dream, which has sometimes been described as providing a better pathway for your children in the future, the next generation, so to speak, that really is what most people really want in life. Yet it seems as though most of the things that we've done governmentally and even in other aspects of society have done more harm to both education and the family than good. So how do you see that? Am I way off base on this, Renee, or is M&T doing its thing in those two areas to really, I guess, produce better results for the next generation?
You know, let me start by saying we're trying to learn, and we've been trying to learn for a very long time. I don't think we always get it right. But we're more and more informed by engaging. I think that, you know, if we had a mission, I would say it's probably to, improve the quality of life, for all individuals in our community. And so when we talk about the culturals and investments that we make for places, special places that people can go to learn and to improve the quality of their life, it fits into that theme. And we've always sort of had this view that one of the best mechanisms to be able to do that is through education. And we just believe that that's one of the core things out there that you need to have. So whether it be the Promised Neighborhood or supporting people with scholarships at some of our local schools. We think that education has been really important. And I think it's really important to sort of think about it as, you know, there's lots of definitions of family. So it's not necessarily focused on any one set of individuals. There are single parents. There are families that have been cobbled together that are not necessarily even the same family line. But in any case, what transcends it all is we think that if you can supply people with education, you're more likely than not to have them be able to control their own destiny and improve the quality of their life.
You know, it's interesting. You cite the fact, and it is a fact, that there's more than one definition of family. But if you look at the studies, it's the nuclear family in whatever form that may be that really spells, provides the infrastructure for long-term success in most individuals' lives. And that coupled with the education that you're talking about are really, in my opinion, not just my opinion, but what I seem to be able to read in our volumes of literature about all this, that those two factors mean more than anything. And it's one of the things that I've said on several different occasions is that without the commitment of M&T and without the example that M&T had set, and particularly in the area of education, that our community would be a far worse place. And I commend you and everyone at the bank for what you've done. One of the things I'd just like to shift gears, if I can, for a second here, Renee, and just look at the bank itself in terms of its performance given the COVID-19 pandemic in particular. You had reported at the beginning of this year, following the end of last year, that 2019, I think, was the best year in the history of the bank. And then the pandemic hit. And you reported in April that there was some 40%+ decline in net income as a result of the impact of that pandemic. How are you seeing things now, and how are you evolving coming, you know, as we reopen, so to speak?
Yeah, so, you know, I think your description of it is great. In fact, in January and February, and for us in the banking industry in general and the economy, things were really robust when you know, before the pandemic hit. I think that what you saw in the first quarter was us all sort of reacting to the uncertainty that's out there. We tried to look through, you know, the myriad of companies that we service and the customers we service, and to try to look through to see what the possible effects could be down the road. So we had a decline in profitability, but we still posted one of the strongest results of any of the top 20 banks in the country, because we're a pretty healthy place. I'm simply proud of the fact that we continued our pattern. I think we're on something like 177 quarters without having a losing quarter. So things are good at M&T. But what you see is that, you know, if you think about the fact that there was a lot of forbearance that had been given to customers because of the uncertainty around payments, and then you think about introducing things like the Paycheck Protection Program, there has been, and then also unemployment insurance, there has been a fair amount of liquidity put into the system directed at helping, you know, all the constituents of our community. Just to put it in perspective, think about the fact that, you know, we talk over the last decade about the Buffalo Billion, and probably the biggest factor of the Buffalo Billion was that it spurred private sector growth and input of, I think, around $5.3 billion. So $5.3 billion of private sector money coming into Buffalo. In a matter of 3 or 4 weeks, all banks in Western New York, through the PPP program, supplied $2.6 billion. And that went out to 17,500 businesses. And those businesses employ 325,000 employees. So, staggering amount. Now, as it turns out, if you think about Western, if you think about the effect, the majority of those impacts across the country were in the service industry. So you think about public transportation, retail, leisure, hospitality, restaurants, and so forth. As it turns out, Buffalo is more dependent upon those service industries than most cities across America. So even though we fared okay in terms of the virus, let's say relative to Manhattan, we had, I think, the third largest impact to our economy, just because of the makeup of our economy when everything got shut down. My sense is that things are starting to come back. It's nice to see people actually sitting at restaurants, albeit social distancing. We're seeing debit card use and transactions go up from the lows that we saw about 6 weeks ago, staying with credit card purchases. So we see things coming back online, and it's too early to tell sort of how deep this will be, but just to give you one perspective, even with the surprise in the jobs report, in the country we have 19,500 people unemployed, which is almost exactly twice as much, you know, 100% higher than in the great financial crisis. Now, the hope is that those will come back as things start to come online, but it does produce a fair amount of uncertainty. In either case, you know, we're pretty strong and we're not too worried about the bank. The bank will be there for its communities to help them get through the process.
Renee, we have to go to break right now, but I want you to think about over the break two things. How do you see people working differently than now and in the future than they were in the prior to the pandemic? And what have we learned about real estate along the way? And we'll be right back with more from Renee Jones from our house tours after these important messages.
Hunt has been serving your real estate services needs since 1911. In all that time, Hunt has never lost their commitment to this community, and nothing, including our current challenges, will change that commitment. Hunt will face the challenges as they always have with you, together. Through the power of state-of-the-art technology, they're able to remain open for business at Hunt Mortgage. Call 633-3700 and any of Hunt's mortgage professionals can assist you. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the continuously improving huntrealestate.com, where everything is easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, home of the pre-purchase commitment and the low rate and closing cost guarantee. Live remote is with me today in the studio is Renee Jones, the chairman and CEO of M&T Bank, and we've been having a wide-ranging conversation, which I wish I could continue for about another couple hours here, but I know Renee has other things to do, and they're going to cut me off here pretty soon. So, Renee, before the break, I asked you if you could consider, and I know you are, but how you see people working in the future, given what we've been through and kind of the new state of the environment based upon the pandemic.
Yeah, well, let me start with the fact that you know, it's our belief and that there's a race for relevance of small and mid-tier cities in America. And that has come about because, you know, our economy has really shifted to, one where the creation of things and solving problems and being entrepreneurial is really what's driving the U.S. economy. And, for a long period of time, the only places that participated in that were the very, very large cities on the coast, whether it be San Francisco and Silicon Valley or New York City. And I think that's really changing. And I think it's really important for us to understand. At our own firm, we're really shifting our thought process, as I talked about, and our mindset to be solving problems for customers. And that requires new capabilities and new skill sets. So, you know, for example, we've been hiring technologists. We've been hiring a customer experience engineers. We just hired a new head of customer experience. We used to have one user design engineer. We now have upwards to 36, and they sort of help us look at what the customer needs are at the end and help us design new services. So all of these really creative people are key, I think, to economic growth. And so it's one of the reasons why we decided to create the Tech Hub. Well, and that was simply because we wanted to have a magnet for all these startups and entrepreneurs and have a place where they could share ideas. They love to solve problems, and they don't care whether they're solving a problem for a bank or a hospital or a manufacturer. And so in order to participate, we really started, putting an emphasis on that. That's what the Tech Hub is really about. That involves new ways of working. And really what has happened with the pandemic is I would say that those things, those ways of working and the customer demand and the way the customer will approach us has probably leaped forward probably 5 years. We have 90% of our 18,000 workers working from home every day. We completed the PPP program, in a stellar fashion with all of our folks working from home. So I think that's going to change things, but it's probably going to change it around accelerating. People are worried about will people go back to work in buildings. I think they will. I think, when we get comfortable that we have the right protections. And my sense is that the future of real estate is still very bright. For over 20 years, we've seen this trend where people are being put in smaller and smaller square footage per person. Obviously, with social distancing, that means that that's going to have to reverse itself, and we're going to have to give people more space, right? And at the same time, we'll probably logically have more people working from home. So just think about this, Peter. If you're going to know that you're going to work from home permanently going forward, you're probably going to set your house up in a very different way. But that involves real estate.
Renee, you are, in one of the articles I read, you were talking. They were talking about the way that the tech hub will be set up in terms of clusters and kind of ways that people will essentially work by colliding and getting together spontaneously. How do you see that changing as you look forward with the precautions that have to be in place? Are you going with the original plan, or will that be changing as you open that facility?
No, we're moving ahead, so the construction is back on in the space. We firmly believe that collaboration is really key to have collisions, and what we're, I think we're going to find is that we might have to do some things in a slightly different way, but there's no question in my mind from watching all of us working from home, we're adapting and coming up ways. You know, think about Zoom and the use of all the virtual meetings that we've been having. We've been coming up with ways to just do that better so that we can still connect. My sense is that as we get through the proper precautions and we learn more about the virus and hopefully have some solutions, that the demand will be to go back in the same fashion. We're really excited about the tech hub. It's really designed for maximum flexibility, which is very different from most real estate. So we can move things around, we can change, we can adapt. We're probably much better positioned having gone ahead with the tower than we would have been had we not.
You have a varied footprint in downtown Buffalo. Do you see that consolidating, Renee? And how, what will be the impact on the branch bank system, do you think?
Well, you know, first of all, we really are in deep believers in trying to help the community create an ecosystem. And right now that ecosystem is down from the waterfront to the tower all the way up to the medical campus. And we're really focused on being a good community partner and trying to get others to participate in that space, because I think it will attract talent to Buffalo and also provide opportunities for people who have been left out of the system. One of the things, for example, in the tech hub is the tech academy that will help train people who have the aptitude for the space. Embedded in that is that we're learning lots of new things about how to service our customers. And as people move from branches to use other forms of technology, I think what we're learning is that the most important thing is there's a human experience across all of those channels. So it may be that in some places we're more heavily dependent upon the branches, but in other places, as we transition to mobile devices and appointment setting and virtual meetings, that migration will happen. But the one constant will be the M&T, the friendly, knowledgeable, caring M&T person who's servicing the customer. It doesn't matter to me what the venue will be, but we know we're going to be people-centered. So we may be a little different than most people in the banking industry in that space, but we think you can't deliver the product that is uniquely identifiable as M&T without the quality people that we have.
You've said a lot in that last statement, and I'm just trying to understand the implications of all that. And I think a lot of people are watching closely what M&T is going to be doing over the next several months and years, particularly as it affects all the other users of real estate in downtown Buffalo in particular, and all the other cities in which you operate. I'm a firm believer in what you're talking about in terms of creating the creative environment that you're doing through the tech hub and all the implications for it. As a matter of fact, I'm going to get a chance to see it sometime soon, which will be kind of exciting, and I applaud you for that effort. We've only got about a minute left here, Renee, and I just would like if you could kind of capsulize what you see as the immediate next couple months for us in terms of getting through the two main issues facing us, the pandemic and obviously the issues of social unrest. I know 1 minute's not long enough, but how would you summarize how we're going to get through this?
Well, look, I think we got this really fun time period in front of us where, you know, we're coming back to work, we're coming back online. And I would say, you know, don't be too nervous about it. We're going to test and learn. You know, we're learning from other states. We're learning from each other. So if you're in the restaurant business, you should be sharing ideas with other restaurants. And this can be an exciting time to get back online. I think as it goes to what's going on in Buffalo and around the world, I think we got to think about compassion. I think we got to think about rebuilding and strengthening the social contract that we all have with each other. And, you know, that can come with some new policy, but it also can come simply with a smile as you walk down the street and just sort of change those types of things change the way we interact. So the more we can work on relationship building across communities, I think the better it will position us to have a different outcome the next time, you know, before the next Floyd issue tends to happen.
I think that was beautifully said, Renee, and I can't thank you enough for joining me today on the show. I know I express the feelings of my listeners as well. Thank you for being with us, Renee. I'm going to invite you back because there's a lot more I wanted to ask you. And I want to thank all our listeners for being with us. We'll be back again next week at the same time. And remember, when it comes to real estate, all upstate is Hunt Country.